I'm on a fire. We've been here 6 hours. They've had nothing to eat or drink. Can you help us? And I said, well, how many do you need? And he said, 50. And so I said, okay, I'll be there in an hour. And then I thought to myself, what did I just say?
What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to Family Fridays here on the Gravity Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Chris. Thank you for choosing to tune in today. Hey, folks, we're continuing this conversation. How do you stay grounded in a world full of noise and chaos? And for the listeners of the show, I'm guessing you're somehow connected to the first responder community. If not, that's cool too. Because honestly, the things we're talking about on here relate to everyone. We're just using that first responder, our police, firefighters, EMS, dispatchers, military, corrections, all of the folks in that world. We're kind of using that as our starting point to have these conversations, because they get to, it's kind of a privilege and it's also a poison to see society at its rawest. And that's what our first responders see. Today on the show, we're going to be bringing on a cop mom who has done so much to support our first responder community. Most people know her as Mama. I first met her as Ginger Passarelli, and now I'm calling her Mama, because what she started doing was literally making some soup, providing some food to first responders at an event where her pastor and a chaplain asked her to come out and support. And that was over 20 years ago. And in the meantime, or in the time from that first call out, Mama has caused other women to be attracted to this cause, and they have been traveling around our country providing food to first responders at critical incidents. They operate on the fiscal year, so from July of 22 to June of 23, they were called out 52 times in 6 states. And I don't know about you, but when you're out on a big fire, on a critical incident, having food, especially if it's homemade food, really lifts your spirits. In that time, they provided over 21,000 meals. 21,000 meals. And they do this at zero cost to the organization. So if a police or a fire department, if the military, Border Patrol calls them to their location to support them, they're providing those meals 100% free. They travel there on the dime of what is now known as the Soup Ladies. They actually have a nonprofit. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. For the nonprofit I wanted to spotlight is Soup Ladies. Everything I've already mentioned is them. And you're going to hear a whole lot more from Mama here in a second. It'll be down in the show notes, but check out their website, soupladies.org. They operate 100% off of donations. If you're looking at a way to support first responders, support the Soup Ladies, and then they'll go out there and do the boots on the ground work to provide hot meals to our first responders. With that, folks, let's get into this interview with Mama Passarelli. Mama Passarelli, welcome to the Gravity Podcast.
Well, good morning.
Hey, I love...
Good day to you.
Good day to you as well. We're both from Washington State, and we have similar circles because of the work that you do. And so I'm just excited to get into that, both the work you're currently doing, but I also want to hear the story that led you here, because I think that's going to be interesting. If you don't mind, for the listeners that have never heard of you before, the Soup Ladies, can you just give that short introduction of who you are?
Okay. Our Soup Ladies have been actually operating for about 20 years, and we only feed first responders at critical incidents. So it could be police, fire, search and rescue. It could be at a riot. It might be at a building that's on fire. Just whatever incident, we bring homemade food to that incident.
I love it. And how long have you been working with food? I mean, 20 years as the Soup Ladies, but kind of with your piece of the story, how long have you been in the food biz?
I'm Italian my whole life. I've been cooking my whole life.
You were the sous chef when you were younger for your mom or whoever, and then you just kept going.
Yep, and grandma, I remember sitting at her kitchen table making tortellinis,
Oh,
little
wow.
tiny tortellinis by hand. So
Yes, I love it.
those are special times, actually.
Yeah. Oh, you completely right. Those moments and those memories of the people that we don't have with us anymore that we love, and the things
That's
they
right.
taught us that I'm sure built up to being who you are. In this case, we're talking about a tangible lesson of how to make tortellini. But the reality is, the people that we love and that love us and that pour into us as people, they teach us so many other life lessons.
Absolutely.
So you were in the food biz early on. If I understand correctly, you owned a restaurant like that. That was before the Soup Ladies. Is that correct?
Actually, I was doing soup before that. Before we bought the restaurant, I used to make soup every week for our church. And I asked the pastor, I said, I'd like to bring soup to church. And every week, and he goes, oh, how about once a month and we could have a potluck and this and that. And I said, no, I think I'm supposed to do it every week. So for about 2 years, I brought a pot of soup to church every Sunday morning, and it just I loved it. I'd get up at 5:30 on Sunday morning, make a pot of soup and take it to church. And then pretty soon the church was growing and I needed another pot. So I said, Steve, I need another pot. And so he bought me one. And then I was making two pots of soup every Sunday. So, and it just grew. And we ended up going down. He was a chaplain for the fire department in Maple Valley. And he called me one day and he said, and this was before the restaurant opened up. He said, I'm on a fire. We've been here 6 hours. They've had nothing to eat or drink. Can you help us? And I said, well, how many do you need? And he said, 50. And so I said, okay, I'll be there in an hour. And then I thought to myself, what did I just say? But I did it. I got there in an hour and I fed everybody and it was great. And I thought, I like this. So
Wow.
I kind of started that way, just, small beginnings.
Yeah, I love to hear your servant heart and also your obedience to you feeling convicted by God to bring soup to church. And why soup though? Like, why not banana bread or I don't know, a fruit salad or why soup?
Well, because I'm a mom, and the first thing you want to do when church, when they say amen, you want to get the kids napped and fed. So if I could take care of one of those things, because as a mom, that's what I would want.
Yeah.
And so when you take things that are very practical and do them in a way that helps everyone, then there you go.
Yeah. You and I had a little bit of a conversation before hitting start here, but and you were talking about things that go together. And I remember when I was in Iraq, some of the food wasn't very good. Some of it was actually really good, but some of it wasn't. I remember this short window where they must have ran out of money or something because the pizza was literally like bread with cheese on top. But midnight chow. So for the folks that worked all night, there was a midnight chow. And soup was my favorite dish. Literally, what they did was they would take the food from the day that hadn't been eaten and they would combine it. And they clearly knew what they were doing. Because they didn't just like throw everything in there like the bad pizza. But I mean, like there would be like full chicken legs in there, bone and all, and the meat would just fall off the bone. And I feel like the bone probably gave the soup some flavor as well. And
Yep.
out of all the time in Iraq that I didn't like being there, I'll tell you what, I have this vivid memory of midnight chow and the soup. It was delicious. There's something that soup does, I feel like, kind of warms up our soul a little bit, you know?
I have to agree with you. And when I'm out in the freezing cold with, like search and rescue, I mean, I could be up to my knees in snow. And these guys, we pull up with the truck, open up the back, and start serving them, and it really warms you down to your toes.
Yeah.
It that's just what soup does.
So you start making this for church. Originally it was going to be a pot and then it turned into two pots. Then the Was it your pastor who was also the chaplain, you said?
Yes, he
And
was.
he calls you out to an event, right, where people need to be fed, and he thinks of you because he knows this is your heart and your skill set. So if I'm hearing correctly, you responded out that first time by yourself because it was now. He needed you now. You threw it together. You went. At what point did this start growing into something more than just your pastor asking you to support events?
Well, when I was sitting in church, and they were calling for volunteers to go down to M Katrina after Katrina hit. And so we ended up in Mississippi. But while I was sitting in church, and they said, we need volunteers to go down to the Gulf Coast. And I looked at my husband, I didn't even say a word. And he goes, yes, you can go. And so we went, and we were cooking on a beach overlooking the Gulf of Mexico on barbecues and driveway turkey fryers and anything that would make heat, making food for the people that were in this restricted area. We were cooking for them, and they could either eat our food or MREs.
I already know my choice.
And so I didn't have a car there. We had a driver that took us everywhere, and I said I need to go to town and get some supplies. So we ended up going to a Sam's Club nearby in Gulfport, and I brought a whole got a whole bunch of supplies to cook with, and it was I called my husband and I said, hey, just wanted to let you know I kind of spent a lot of money today, and I need you to put some more money into our checking account. And he said, well, how much? And I said, just a lot. And when you go out and you are in ministry, but there's people that got have needs, and everything falls by the wayside. You give everything you have to take care of those people. And whether or not we could afford it, you just do it.
If God's calling us to do it, you have to. I have to respond. I have to respond with
Absolutely.
obedience. And
Yes.
I've had that conversation with my wife. Now, here towards the end of my career, the police department I served at had a nonprofit that had what was called the Community Care Fund, to where if I saw someone that needed a tank of gas, a meal, clothes, I could just buy it with the nonprofit's money. But before that, both me and the people I worked with, I know for a fact a number of folks that filled up gas tanks. I know for a fact a number of
Absolutely.
folks that asked someone, "Hey, McDonald's is right there. What do you want me to get you? Let me buy you some food." And depending on the size of the purchase, then when I was getting home, I was having the conversation with my wife. "Hey, babe, so there's a
I
little
just spent $200 at
yeah,
McDonald's.
there's a little bit less money in our gas account for the month."
Yeah.
But
But it always gets made up. It
yeah.
always comes in
Well,
every single
I'll
time.
tell you what, I have never been in need. I've been in want, but through my years of even being a poor airman in the Air Force, where my wife and I were living on $900 a month, ends always met, and we were fed and joyful. So you said we went. So who was we that went down for Katrina?
There was five of us total, and I've never been on a mission trip in my life. And there was five of us, and we were sleeping in a it was the CB Naval Base in Gulfport, and we were sleeping in a warehouse with 3,000 of our closest friends, and there was just cots everywhere in this warehouse, and a rope tied between two things, just a rope. And I called my husband. I said, there's men's clothes on the cot next to mine. There's no, anyway, we all slept in our clothes. We were all working hard, and the lights went out at 10 p.m. and the lights came on at 6 a.m. and we were never there when the lights were on. We were out the door at like 4:30 in the morning, and we get home, right around 10 o'clock at night, take a shower and crash into bed.
Yeah.
And these ladies that were with me were from my church, and there was, the guy who had this, and I'm going to use air quotes, a kitchen at the location where we were cooking. We got there day one. That night, he had just had open heart surgery like a month before, and he went into the hospital.
Yeah.
So our driver came in and woke me up about 4 in the morning and said, "Hey, Greg's in the hospital. We need to, we're, it's us. It's all us." So we go out to the cooking site, and I said, and sometimes you just need to take a leadership position.
Yeah.
And I said, "This is how you wash your hands." We had a cooler we poured bottled water into and some bleach, and we'd swish our hands, dry off, glove up. We'd split open hefty garbage bags, lay them over a table, and that was our sanitary work surface. So if you don't know how to keep people safe, don't come and help. But if you know good basic skills, then come and help.
Yes.
And so we started cooking, and I said, "If I ask somebody for something, don't ask me where it's at, because I know where nothing is. So if I need something, just go look for it." And we put out like 700 or 800 meals that day
Wow, I love
on
your
Broadway cookie fryers and barbecues.
improv and the point that you made with keeping people safe. I worked in the food industry on and off throughout my life, whether through volunteer stuff or whether actually, making my income before law enforcement. And I still have a valid food handler's card. I actually have one
Good.
currently in two states.
Oh, good. You can come with us on our next trip.
That's what the way my brain thinks. I was just dehydrating food this morning. And I mean, I prepped a counter space for myself, both with cleaning it and then sanitizing it and then prepping. And it was funny because I had some friends that served in the missionary field for probably about a decade overseas, maybe even longer than that, in Australia and New Zealand. And we had them over when they were fresh out of the mission field. And we made some food and it involved some meat. And then we started talking. Well, 3 hours later, it's still on the countertop. So I go and grab the food and I start to throw it away. And they're like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "This has been in the danger zone too long. I mean, like, we need to cool it within 4 hours. And like, it's not, we've left it out." And they're like, "You can't throw that away." So it was comical for me to see, as missionaries, they needed to conserve all of their food because they were living on a very tight budget, even if that meant eating some food that was questionable in their homes. Whereas me, if we go to a restaurant and we get it in a to-go box, the clock has already started in my brain. Like if me and my wife need to stop somewhere, I'm kind of stressed a little bit. I'm like, I don't know. And then finally I realized, you know what? I can just throw the food away. If my wife wants to stop at the store, I'm gonna let her stop at the store. And if we're gonna throw away our leftovers, we can throw away the leftovers. So, was this the beginning of the Soup Ladies, this group of women that went with you, or is there more to the story before you guys became the Soup Ladies?
No, we were making soup, and it just fit. And we were the soup ladies, and I'd already been called the soup lady at church,
Yeah.
because I brought soup every week. But when we went down there, it was like this. I could just feel in my heart that feeding the first responders was, that's for me. That's the thing I'm gonna do,
Yeah.
is I'm gonna take care of first responders. And I didn't know how to do that. I had no idea. And pretty soon, we started, one of the kids at our church was with King County Search and Rescue, and he came up to me one Sunday after church, and he said, "Mama, do you think you could bring food out to Search and Rescue, because there's another really, really large organization that operates and brings pizza to incidents. They wouldn't come out to their incidents until they'd been there for 24 hours." And I'm going, "Oh my gosh, not right. And so if you have people that are volunteers going out to look for somebody lost, you need to take care of those volunteers. And so I made food and they took it out there. They didn't know me, so they came and picked up the food at the restaurant and then took it out to the incident. And then I talked to the deputy who was in charge, and I said, I can do this. I would love to feed your people. And she said, well, how much would it cost? And I said, it's not going to cost anything. And she goes, you're going to feed all of our people for free. And I said, yes, I am. And we did. We started doing that. And then we did that for like a year. And then I said, what do we need to do to be actually like official with you guys? And she said, well, you got to take your ICS 100, 200, 700. I took the 800 because it was there. So we took the ICS stuff. We all went through background checks. Some agencies require fingerprints, but we filled out applications and were background checked. And then we were issued a credential that we were registered with Washington State as emergency workers. And so then we started getting called to homicides and SWAT call outs and big fires and bigger things. And you realize then how important them having a good meal after, because SWAT call outs last between 9 and 11 hours. And it's just the way it is. And they used to call me like at the 8 hour mark or the 9 hour mark. And then by the time I get there, I was bedding back into service because the incident's over. And I said, you guys know how long you're going to be here. So call me at the 4 hour mark or the 3 hour mark. And they said, well, what if it gets resolved before that? And I said, then you guys are going to eat the stuff anyway. So what? It's not a big deal. And so then they started calling us earlier. And then we'd get out there and they'd rotate people in and out and get them fed. And there was, they were always so glad. One time I had some leftover prime rib at the restaurant. So I made like a stroganoff soup with, pasta in it and sour cream. And so it was very high carb, high protein meals. And then I had this, some horseradish sauce left over. And so I thought, I wonder what this would taste like. So I threw it in the pot and, headed down the road and got to the SWAT call out. And these guys are like, Mama, are you married? Going, you can't possibly afford me. But they obviously loved it. And so, I've tried to make it for them several times since then, when I get called out to that kind of thing. I would keep those ingredients handy always.
And there's something about because I love, if we wait until the 8 hour mark or the whatever nonprofit that comes out at 24 hours, here's the problem. People need to be cared for way before that. I mean,
Way
if it's
before.
especially over here in Eastern Washington when it's hot, I need as a supervisor, I was having to think about my people like at hour one. At hour one, I'm thinking,
Correct.
how can I hydrate them? How can I provide them? And usually I wasn't thinking about feeding them just yet, but fluids was super important. And then the homicide scenes,
Absolutely.
when I was a detective, I mean, if you get called out at midnight, guess what? By 4 a.m., I'm starting to get hungry. By 6 a.m. or 8 a.m., yes, like
You're hangry.
I'm hangry. I'm starting to feel wore out. I need my blood sugar to spike a little bit, with some great food. And so, having people like the soup ladies that are willing to come out and take care of that is so huge. I mean, you're really a force multiplier. You're not giving us more humans, but you're making all the humans that are there able to operate at their
What a
fullest
great
potential.
way to put that. I love that.
Force multipliers. We're not going to give you a gun just yet. Maybe we will. I don't know, but I'm just saying.
Well, how do you know I don't have one?
I like it. Like you even
Or
more,
two or three.
Mama. Yes. So, tell me about not too long ago, you were actually featured, you and the soup ladies were actually featured on, I think it was Returning the Favor, a Mike Rowe show. Can you talk about that?
Well, yes, we were. He came and he did a story about us and followed us around and, talked to people we feed and stuff. And it was about a 20-minute video. It's on Facebook and you can look it up. But it was very, it really showed our heart, that we just love these first responders and stuff. And after that show aired, I was getting calls from police officers all over the country.
Yeah.
And one guy called me up and it was like 9:30 at night, and I'm in Seattle, and he's saying, "I just saw the show and I just wanted to call and thank you." And then he started crying. And I said, and he was a police officer, and I said, "Where are you at?" And he goes, "New York." And I go, "It's 12:30. What are you doing up so late?" He goes, "I'm on duty." He just wanted to call. He just, sometimes you just need to validate people and stuff. And I'm so grateful for his service. And, just I hope people know how much we love them, because the people that are serving with me have an enormous amount of love for our first responders, and especially police, because we have been, they're serving them. And stuff that we see when people are spitting toward the police, they're flipping them off, they're saying the meanest things you could ever imagine. And it's like, you're talking to my people, you're talking to the people I love. And there's just no, there's, where did manners go? There's doesn't seem to me much today.
It sounds like Mama Ginger's gonna turn into Mama Bear, and
Oh,
we're gonna have a little
well, and I
throwdown.
have done that.
Here's the
I have
thing.
done that.
Here's the thing. Our first responders, and for all the listeners, you are remarkable human beings. You work 20,
Absolutely.
24-hour schedules. You see the worst of humanity. You
Yes.
are constantly getting pulled this way and that way. Your sleep schedules are getting flipped and flopped, and you aren't
Yep.
being fed sometimes, and you're. And you do all of that. Here's the thing, though. I think the majority of society appreciates our first responders. Now, they need to be vocal about it because we do
Yes.
need to hear it. Because that's why this guy in New York, this officer in New York, is calling you, Mama, is because your story connected with his heart. He needed to hear that. And I'm telling you,
Yes.
from being in the trenches and having, I mean, COVID was a kick in the teeth. I think it was for a lot of folks, but
It
just that.
was very hard.
That whole time period, the COVID piece, the anti-policing movement, the defund the police, all that was super heavy on me. And
Yes.
what made it easier was here in Eastern Washington, our community is so remarkable. It was hard for me to fill up my gas tank or to get a cup of coffee without having a citizen shake my hand, thank me for
Yep.
what I was doing.
Yep.
For a while there, every single day, we had church groups, businesses, families bringing food in, bringing in gift cards. We had restaurants coming in and
Yep.
providing catered meals for us at the police station.
Yep.
And we were just doing our job, right? I mean, that was really most of the folks I work with, that's their mentality. They were like, this is just my job. Like, I signed up for
Want
this.
to go home at the end of my shift.
Yes. And we need to hear that, though. We need to hear that. It's not about, I don't need you to give me money. I don't even need the coffee gift cards. Although, I mean, especially as a retired cop, you want to give me a coffee gift card, I'm going to accept that. But really, even more powerful than the gift cards and more powerful than the presents was the gratitude, was the
Yep.
handshake, the
Yep.
eye to eye, genuine
Yep.
thank you. I
Look them
appreciate
in
you.
the eye.
Yeah.
Yes. I have a funny story. My daughter is a officer. So I'm a cop mom,
Yes.
and I had brought a pot of soup to her, because she's always going, "Mom, could you bring a pot of soup to the department?" I always say, of course, I say yes. And so I brought a pot of soup in and got it all served up, fed who was there, and then packaged everything and put it in the refrigerator for the other shifts coming on. And I left a few soup lady patches on the counter in the main entryway of the department. And this new gal who just started working for the department, she sees these patches and she goes, "Oh my gosh, was the soup lady here?" And they go, "Yeah, she brought soup for everybody and stuff." And then my daughter goes, "Oh," and she said, "You guys know Mama?" And my daughter goes, "Yeah, she's my mom." And she goes, "You're kidding. Your mom's mama?" Yeah. Yeah, it was very cool. Very cool. And she was in Seattle during the Summer of Love, and we were putting out 1,000 meals a day downtown in at the West Precinct in Seattle, feeding all the officers who were taking care of people that didn't have common sense. I guess that's the best, nicest way to
You're
put
being
them.
very kind. In the way you're saying that, Mama, you are being very kind. And you know what? Let's be kind to people, right? Wow. So, if did I understand that part of that Mike Rowe thing is they equipped you with some wicked cool equipment? Like that was part of the show?
Yes, we got a. Oh, and you know, I love vintage things. I've got a 1938 Frigidaire in my kitchen,
Oh,
and
wow.
my husband hates it, but I love it. My house was built in 1922, and I want my kitchen to look like it's from 1922. So, I love vintage and old things, and they found this 1948 Aeroglide camp trailer, and they gutted it and put in all the equipment so we could and there's hot boxes and pots and burners and propane tanks and everything so that we can have a totally self-contained kitchen and we can set it up anywhere. And so that has been useful quite a few times.
Yeah. I mean, if you have the ability to set up in a physical kitchen, do you guys still set up in a physical kitchen?
We prefer a physical kitchen just for having some running water, way to wash pots, you know, and stuff. And there have been times, well, over the last year and a half, and almost 2 years, we have made 10 trips down to the southern border, and a lot of these locations that we go to do not have a stove. So we use butane burners and stuff, and some of them have little tiny hand wash sinks, and there's no way to wash a pot. So we usually have an Airbnb that we stay in because it's way less than a hotel, and we just take our pots with us and wash them when we get home, and then bring them back with us the next day. But if you can't zig, you zag. You just adjust to whatever equipment is there. You make it work, and you don't whine, you don't complain. There's really no reason for that. And if there are people there that depend on us, that they don't need to hear us going, "Oh, well, we don't have this, and we don't." Oh, they got enough to think about. We just don't need to talk about that at all.
So, for you, when you guys respond out, are you mainly providing that service to Western Washington just because of your guys' physical location?
Oh no, we get called out to all kinds of stuff. We got called to Nashville for a Christmas Day bombing because
Oh,
what
wow.
else are you going to do on Christmas morning? We went to El Paso. There was a mass shooting at a Walmart, and there was I think 22 people killed. We've been to the school shootings, college shootings. All over we've actually gone all over the country. We went to Minneapolis for the last week of a certain trial that we all know the name of. I'm not going to say it. We went for the last week of that trial, and we were in the county building up on the fourth floor in a training room. And I said, we were cooking for the sheriff's office, the people who working in the courts, the police departments that are around in the area. People were coming in, rotating in and out, getting fresh food, homemade, cooked for them by safe people.
So how does that work? Like, I mean, literally, are people seeing you on the internet and they're like totally cold calling you, or is there like a process for someone to get a hold of the soup ladies?
We get called out. People hear about us. So, like when we went to Las Vegas, we were there after the big shooting there, and we worked with some chaplains that were there. I am also a police chaplain too. So, we word spreads. People say, "Well, there's these ladies that come and they cook for you, and it doesn't cost anything." And so we'll get a phone call, and they'll ask about the logistical side of things, and then they say, "Can you guys come?" And absolutely, if we have a team available and ready to go, absolutely, we'll go.
Yeah. And so what are you guys able to cover? What do you need those host agencies that are making the request to cover? Like, do you need them to fly you guys there, I would assume, and find some kind of lodging?
No, it costs them nothing to call us.
You gotta be
We take
kidding
care
me.
of our own plane tickets. We have so many generous sponsors.
Yeah.
Our soup ladies, we have never, ever, ever had to say, "Well, no, we can't go there because we can't afford it."
Yeah.
There are people who donate money to the soup ladies specifically to feed the first responders. And
Yeah.
once we get there, we sometimes we'll be sleeping in a gymnasium. We've slept in tough sheds. We've slept in locker rooms.
Yeah.
We sleep wherever we can. We try and keep our costs down as much as possible. And we usually rent a vehicle while we're there. And it's usually a minivan, which I would never. I always swore I would never drive a minivan, but it does haul a lot of
It is
stuff.
so
So.
functional. I checked that box many years ago in my early 30s because as the family grew and as we did vacations and I looked at the price of that compared to an SUV, I was like, yep. And I traded in my four-door, 4x4 truck for a minivan. And yeah, I still have my man card. It's in my pocket. I don't know if I'm supposed to have it or not when I did that, but I still have it.
Well, and I have my little convertible sitting in the garage, and
There
I
you
drive it
go.
on nice days. So, I mean, when we're out of town, we have our big trucks that we can get a lot of stuff in. They're four-door trucks, and we can get a lot of stuff in them. But I have to tell you a funny story. We were in Memphis, and we had rented a minivan, and it's a huge department there in Memphis, and so we were cooking in a particular location, and then these different precincts were coming to this location to pick up food to take back to their precincts. And well, we had to go get supplies and stuff like that. So we had one police car in front and two behind us wherever we went. We always were escorted in that city. We were escorted everywhere. And so we were driving down the freeway, and they just said, "Keep up." And so I'm like, "Okay." And I look down at the speedometer. We're in the very far left lane, going 94 miles an hour in a minivan with a police escort. And I mean, the picture of that in my mind was so hysterical. I'm just dying.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah,
A
you.
mom-mobile with a police escort.
Yes.
It was very funny. Those guys were so sweet to us, though. And we would park our vehicle outside of whatever store we were at, and they left two people with the vehicle and one person to go in the store with us.
Yeah.
And we were never alone. They were just awesome. And we'd go back there in a heartbeat.
Do you guys do like a formal fundraising event? I mean, this is a lot of money that you guys take in through generous donors. How do you, is it just random or do you guys do some kind of an event?
We did a fundraiser about, let's see, we've been operating for 20 years. So probably around 17 years ago, we did one fundraiser, and we've never done one since. I think that, and this is my chaplain side coming out, and if there's people that get offended by God, I'm so sorry that, but I have never, we never ask for money ever. It just comes in. And I think God prompts people to donate money to us There's no other way to explain it because we've never asked, and we've been doing this for 20 years now.
Yeah.
And it's always there. I've never ne I don't know how much money we have. I never touch money. That is our strict policy. I never touch money. Nobody, if somebody wants to give me a check or a donation, I just go to the website, donate there, do whatever, but I don't touch money, period.
Yeah.
Because too many organizations falter and die because somebody has sticky fingers or
Yeah.
somebody spends money in an inappropriate way. Or so, yeah, that's not happening at our organization.
And I have stepped into those nonprofits after that's happened and spent the 2 or 3 years trying to rebuild it because of presidents or treasurers who had sticky fingers or misplaced it at best.
Right. And
Wow.
so I just don't touch it.
Yeah.
Everything is on plastic. We have our credit card we use to buy our food and our supplies and anything that we might need. And sometimes supplies are socks and underwear.
Totally.
Sometimes, and I've been known to do this where I've gone into a Walmart and grabbed one of those little red baskets and scooped off because I wanted a certain size bottle. Because we were up at the Oso mudslide for 16 days while they were digging for remains,
Oh,
and
well.
people weren't drinking enough water, and they're getting headaches and stuff. And so I just grabbed my arm and I scooped all of the little bottles, the little 24 bottles, and that had 24 tablets in it. And I just bought all of them and put them on a table, and I said, if you touch one that is yours, do not share it with anybody because we're not having cross contamination. And so they would take, obviously I'm not a doctor, I can't give it to them, but if it's sitting on the table, they certainly can take it.
Yeah.
And so we try and think of those kinds of things where we're always keeping people safe, but sometimes you buy things that are not food. Sometimes you're buying socks and underwear. I mean, there was people that couldn't change their clothes for days, and we've been out on some stuff, and I just remember these poor FBI guys. They were in the same suit for 3 days, and I'm going, I'll bet your underwear is kind of ripe.
Yes. Oh, completely.
Yeah, so I mean, we try and serve where best we can.
I love it. How long have you guys been an actual nonprofit, a 501c3?
Well, I think we got that about a year after we started off. So probably 18, 19 years, something like
Oh,
that.
wow. Yeah. Love it.
So quite a while.
Yeah. And just an estimate. I know it probably changes per year and changes per request. About how many of these events, whether local, Western Washington, or nationwide, how many events do the Soup Ladies respond to a year?
My husband did all the facts and figures. I think last year we did 21,000 meals in six different states, and he had the number of volunteer hours on there. It was, up in the thousands
Yeah.
of hours of volunteer hours. How many people went on each team? So I think 21. If I'm remembering correctly, 21 incidents and over six states, and then locally we get called out a couple times a month for different if they're having a long investigation for a homicide or a big fire where they have to stay on the fire all night. So there's lots of different scenarios, I guess.
Yeah, totally. I love it. Hey, Mama, for folks that have never heard of you or the Soup Ladies before, what are the best ways for them to connect with you or follow the work that you're doing?
Our website is a great place to go. My number is the only number on the website. And so people are free to call me anytime they have questions, or if they have an incident and they're not sure it's the kind of incident we would go to. We have people like that. Like, we're not going to travel 3 states away for 10 people.
Yeah, totally.
It just we assess each incident as it comes in, and we try and be really practical. And really, I'm very conservative with our money. We try, and now obviously things have changed a little bit as far as that goes, because it used to be we were at like $2 a person or $1.50 per person feeding them. And then it's, up to 3.5. And then all the groceries went up, doubled.
Yeah,
And
totally.
so now, so that affects us, on how much we can feed. And last year, we did like over 21,000 meals last year.
Are you on any type of social media things if people want to connect with you on there?
Yes, most of the usual ones, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I don't know what other ones are. I could ask my
Those
granddaughters.
are the main ones that I can think of. And yes, I usually just ask my children because like
Yeah.
I get overwhelmed with the additional ones that constantly get added in. I'm like, yeah,
Yeah.
I'm at my social media limit.
Yeah.
Well, for
And I don't know how entertaining a TikTok would be of some grandma's making soup. I just can't see
You know, I think it
it.
could be entertaining, but it would take a younger person's eye probably of how to capture it
Yeah,
and then push it
I
out.
couldn't do it.
Because my daughter, back when before TikTok was TikTok, there was a name of it before that. I can't remember what it was. But she started a channel and she cleaned out my lawnmower shed. She cleaned out my lawnmower shed. She took everything out, she swept it out, and she showed the end result. It had over a million views.
Really?
TikTok, and again, it wasn't called TikTok at the time. It was before it was called that. They started giving her
Right.
money. They started paying her because of how many
Really?
views she had. So that's where I was like, yeah, I don't understand. I don't understand the formula that
Yeah.
people are looking for. If you cleaning out my, you know what, honey? You can clean out my garage too. Knock that one out of the park,
Yeah.
right? You know, and get like 2 million
Yeah.
views or something. Well, for the listeners, look down in the show notes, the links for all of the Soup Ladies' social media and their website, it will be down there, easy to find. Mama, time is my greatest commodity. I can't make more of this stuff. And you are just giving so much to our first responders and even to me. Thank you so much.
Well, we love you to pieces. Thank you for what you do, and for all the first responders out there. My heart is so happy to be able to serve, and it feeds my soul being able to do that. And some people don't understand that, but once you've experienced that, you don't ever want to stop.
Wow, folks, what a privilege. I know I say that a lot, and I hope I'm not watering it down, but it really is a privilege to get to hold space with another human being, to listen to their story. And so many of the, if not all of the guests that have come on Gravity have just been remarkable human beings that are doing things both in the nonprofit and the for-profit world to help other humans, and usually it's somewhere within that first responder military world. And I just love to hear what Mama and those soup ladies are doing to support our first responders. Hey, Jimmy and I want to hear from you. How are we doing here on the podcast, folks? There's a few different ways for you to communicate back to us. First and foremost, please follow us on whatever podcast platform you're consuming this on. That will cause the next episode to come up in your dashboard. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple, you can rate and review us. There's 5 stars waiting on our main page. We'd really appreciate a 5-star rating. That will increase our viewability. However, folks, you've heard me say it. If I haven't earned 5 stars, then don't give me 5 stars. Instead, shoot me an email at chris@gravityct.com. Let me know how to make a better future Marriage Monday topics or guests for me to interview. Folks, we only get to live this life once. Let's go out and take care of the people in our tribes. Take care of each other. God bless.